In order to avoid collision, they said they pulled up to 1,200 feet and watched the object cross their path at right angles. The two pilots told of swinging in behind the object and following it at 170 miles per hour until it outdistanced them and disappeared from sight about 4 minutes later. They described it as resembling a C-54 without motors, wings or visible means of propulsion. Smooth-surfaced and streamlined. No balloons were reported in the area. A few days later at F.T. Richardson, Alaska, two officers told of sighting a spherical object about 10 feet in diameter flying through the air at tremendous speed, leaving no vapor trail. Another incident still in sources unidentified file took place 5,000 feet above sea level in the Cascade Mountains. Fred M. Johnson, a Portland prospector, told authorities he noticed a strange reflection in the sky and, looking up, spotted 5 or 6 disks about 30 feet in diameter. Johnson said he grabbed his telescope and watched the disks approximately 50 seconds while they banked in the sun. He described them as being round with tails, making no noise and no flying formation. Johnson said while the disks were in sight, the hand on his compass watch tweeted wildly from side to side. Perhaps the most supersized saucer ever sighted was one an Oklahoma City man reported as seeming to be the bulk of 6 B-29s. The observer, who holds a private pilot's license, spotted the object from the ground. He said at first it looked like a big white plane, but moving closer became perfectly round and flat with no protrusions. He heard no sound and reported the speed as probably 3 times that of a jet. Tragedy struck at the flying saucer story early in 1948. On January 7, an unidentified object that looked like an ice cream cone topped with red was sighted over Godman Air Force Base, FT, Knox Key, by several military and civilian observers. The Godman Tower requested a flight of 4 National Guard F-51s in the vicinity to investigate the phenomena. 3 of the planes closed in on the object and reported it to be metallic and of tremendous size. One pilot described it as round like a teardrop, and at times almost fluid. The flight leader, Captain Thomas F. Mantle, contacted the Godman Tower with an initial report that the object was traveling at half his speed at 12 o'clock high. "I'm closing in now to take a good look," he radioed. "It's directly ahead of me and still moving at about half my speed. The thing looks metallic and of tremendous size. It's going up now and forward as fast as I am." "That's 360 miles per hour," Captain Mantle reported from his F-51. "I'm going up to 20,000 feet and if I'm no closer I'll abandon chase." The time was 1,515 hours. That was the last radio contact made by Mantle with the Godman Tower. Later that day his body was found in the wreckage of his plane near F.T. Knox. 5 minutes after Mantle disappeared from his formation, the 2 remaining planes returned to Godman. A few minutes later, one resumed the search, covering territory 100 miles to the south as high as 33,000 feet, but found nothing. Subsequent investigation revealed that Mantle had probably blacked out at 20,000 feet from lack of oxygen and had died of suffocation before the crash. The mysterious object which the flyer chased to his death was first identified as the planet Venus. However, further probing showed the elevation and azimuth readings of Venus and the object at specified time intervals did not coincide. It is still considered unidentified. On the same day, about 2 hours later, a sky phenomena was observed by several watchers over Lockbourne Air Force Base, Columbus, O. It was described as round or oval, larger than a C-47, and traveling in level flight farther than 500 miles per hour. The object was followed by Lockbourne Observation Tower for more than 20 minutes. Observers said it glowed from white to amber, leaving an amber exhaust trail 5 times its own length. It moved like an elevator and at one time appeared to touch the ground. No sound was heard. Finally, the object faded and lowered toward the horizon. Perhaps the most fantastic source citing in technical intelligence records was the widely publicized spaceship which two Eastern Airlines pilots reported encountering in the skies around Montgomery, Alabama, last July. Presumably the object was seen by ground observers at Robins Air Force Base, Macon, Georgia, about an hour before. All reports agreed it was going in a southerly direction, trailing various colored flames, and that it behaved like a normal aircraft insofar as disappearing from the line of sight was concerned. The pilots, Captain C.S. Chiles and John B. Whitted, described the phenomenon as a wingless aircraft, 100 feet long, cigar-shaped and about twice the diameter of a B-29 with no protruding surfaces. We saw it at the same time and asked each other, "What in the world is this?" Chiles told investigators. "Whatever it was, it flashed down toward us and we veered to the left. It veered to its left and passed us about 700 feet to our right and above us. Then, as if the pilot had seen us and wanted to avoid us, it pulled up with a tremendous burst of flame from the rear and zoomed into the clouds, its prop wash or jet wash rocking our DC-3. The flame-shooting mystery craft, as described by the Eastern Airlines pilots, had no fins, but appeared to have a snout similar to a radar pole in front, and gave the impression of a cabin with windows above. Captain Chiles declared the cabin appeared like a pilot compartment, except brighter. He said the illumination inside the body itself approximated the brilliance of a magnesium flare. "We saw no occupants," he told investigators. "From the side of the craft came an intense, fairly dark blue glow that ran the entire length of the fuselage, like a blue fluorescent factory light. The exhaust was a red-orange flame, with a lighter color predominant around the outer edges." The pilots said the flame extended 30 to 50 feet behind the object and became deeper in intensity as the craft pulled up into a cloud. Its speed was said to be about one-third faster than common jets. In their investigation of the incident, Project Saucer personnel screened 225 civilian and military flight schedules and found that the only other aircraft in the vicinity at the time was an Air Force C-47. Application of the Prandtl theory of lift to the incident indicated that a fuselage of the dimensions reported by Chiles and Whitted could support a load comparable to the weight of an aircraft of this size at flying speeds in the subsonic range. The object is still considered unidentified. A unique chapter in the saucer story was written last October by Lieutenant George F. Gorman of the North Dakota National Guard, who said he had a 27-minute dogfight with a flying saucer in the skies over Fargo. Gorman, manager of a Fargo construction company, told this story to Project investigators. On the night of October 1, 1948, he was preparing to land at the Fargo airport after a routine F-51 patrol flight. Cleared by the tower to land, Gorman noticed what appeared to be the tail light of another plane about 1,000 yards away. He queried the tower and was told that the only other aircraft over the field was a Piper Cub, which he could see outlined plainly below him. He saw no outline of anything around the moving light. Gorman closed in to take a look at the mystery light. It was about 6 to 8 inches in diameter, clear white and completely round with a sort of a fuzz at the edges, he said. It was blinking on and off. As I approached, however, the light suddenly became steady and pulled into a sharp left bank. I thought it was making a pass at the tower. I dived after it and brought my manifold pressure up to 60 inches, but I couldn't catch up with the thing. It started gaining altitude and again made a left bank, Gorman told investigators. I put my F-51 into a sharp turn and tried to cut the light off in its turn. By then we were at about 7,000 feet. Suddenly it made a sharp right turn and we headed straight at each other. Just when we were about to collide, I guess I got scared. I went into a dive and the light passed over my canopy at about 500 feet. Then, it made a left circle about 1,000 feet above, and I gave chase again. Gorman said he cut sharply toward the light, which was once more coming at him. When collision again seemed imminent, the object shot straight into the air. Gorman climbed after it to 14,000 feet when his plane went into a power stall. The object turned in a northwest-north heading and disappeared. During the dogfight, Gorman said he noticed no deviation on his instruments, no sounds, odors or exhaust trails from the object. Its speed, he said, was excessive. At times during the chase, his F-51 was under full power with speed varying from 300 to 400 miles per hour in all. The light was observed more than 27 minutes. Gorman described it as having depth although it appeared flat. The mystery light was also seen by L.D. Jensen, airport traffic controller at Fargo, who watched it with a pair of binoculars. He said he was unable to distinguish any shape or form other than what appeared to be the tail light of a very fast-moving craft. In a certified statement, Gorman, who was pilot instructor for French military students World War II, said he was convinced there was thought behind the maneuvers. He declared, "I am also convinced that the object was governed by the laws of inertia because its acceleration was rapid but not immediate, and although it was able to turn fairly tight at considerable speed, it still followed a natural curve. The object could outturn and outspeed the F-51 and was able to attain a much steeper climb and to maintain a constant rate of climb far in excess of the Air Force fighter. When I attempted to turn with the object, I blacked out temporarily due to excessive speed," Gorman stated. "I am in fairly good physical condition and I do not believe there are many pilots who could withstand the run speed affected by the light and remain conscious." From a psychological aspect, the Gorman incident raised the question: it is possible for an object without aeronautical configuration to appear to travel at variable speeds and maneuver intelligently? Preliminary study of more than 240 domestic and 30 foreign incidents by astrophysicist Han Eck indicates that an overall total of about 30% probably can be explained away satisfactorily as astronomical phenomena. On July 20, 1947, observers off the Newfoundland coast reported seeing a series of silver or reddish flashes in the sky, although the object from which they came was not visible. Dr. Han Eck states in his report these flashes were probably nothing more than a fireball. Early in the saucer sensation, mid-July of 1946, capture of a flying disc excited residents of Jackson, Ohio. Later, however, the saucer was identified as a U.S. Army Signal Corps radio sun transmitter used for gathering weather data. Various weather and research balloons have been found at the source of a great number of saucer incidents. One of the most startling occurred last November at Camp Springs, MD. From a plane, an object illuminated by a continuous glowing white light was observed flying on a 360-degree pattern west to east over Andrews Air Force Base. As the pilot made a pass to check on the object, he said it took definite evasive action. He switched his wing and tail navigation lights off, but as he again tried to close in, the saucer flew up and over his plane. He reported the mystery craft's speed as seeming to alternative from 80 miles per hour to 500 or 600 miles per hour. The pilot said it appeared like an oblong ball with one light and no wings or exhaust flames visible. Smaller than a T-6 aircraft, this saucer was reported to be highly maneuverable and capable of near vertical flight. The mystery was cleared up when the object was identified positively as a cluster of cosmic ray research balloons. Columbus, O, residents had their eyes on the skies early last August when several citizens reported seeing a round flying object 20 to 30 feet in diameter, with a constant gray-black perimeter in transparent center. The object seemed to move at a slow, steady pace over the city, making no noise, and occasionally issuing a thin trail of smoke. This was later positively identified as a carnival balloon. Often Wright Field laboratories are called on to make analysis of objects claimed to be fragments salvaged from flying discs. The flaming wheel which fell on Bellefontaine, O, last December and stirred up the populace to a new saucer scare lost its mystery origin in Wright Field labs. Remains of the wheel was in reality a pistol flare fired from the ground. The nation's practical jokers and publicity seekers also have played a role in Project Saucer. One of the biggest tempests was stirred up by two Tacoma, Washington, men, Fred Crisman and Harold A. Dahl. In July 1947, a few days after Kenneth Arnold's Mount Rainier saucers hit the headlines, Dahl reported sighting six discs from a boat in which he was patrolling off Maury Island, Washington. Dahl said one of the discs fluttered down to earth and disintegrated, showering his boat with fragments which caused some damage and killed his pet dog. He and Crisman then attempted to sell the story to a Chicago adventure magazine, which in turn contacted Kenneth Arnold in Boise and asked him to check its authenticity. From Tacoma, Arnold summoned two officers from Army 82 Intelligence to aid in the investigation of Dahl and Crisman's claim. At a meeting in the Winthrop Hotel, Dahl produced some fragments which he alleged came from the disc, which damaged his boat. He related his entire story of the incident to Arnold, Smith and the two Army intelligence men. The next day the two officers left to return to Hamilton Field, California, to participate in an Air Force Day program, taking some of the fragments with them for technical analysis. But tragedy struck en route. The plane crashed, killing both officers although the crew chief and a hitchhiker, the other two passengers, parachuted to safety. Later, under questioning, Crisman and Dahl broke and admitted that the fragments they had produced were really unusual rock formations found on Maury Island and had no connection with flying discs. They admitted telling the Chicago magazine that the fragments could have been remnants of the discs in order to increase the sale value of their story. During the investigation, Dahl's wife consistently urged him to admit that the entire affair was a hoax, and it is carried as such in Project Saucer files. A flying disc became big business in Black River Falls, Wis, where the finder charged 50 cents admission for a look at the saucer until local police stepped in and shut it up in a bank vault. The contrivance, which was fashioned from plywood and cardboard, was supposedly seen in flight near Black River Falls shortly before an electrician said he found it lying in deep grass on the town fairgrounds. After analysis at Mitchell Field, the following report was made: "This contrivance is patently a hoax. It will be held for a reasonable length of time and then disposed of in the nearest ash receptacle. Of such things are some of the saucers made. But the hoaxes and the crank letters in reality play a small part in Project Saucer. Actually, it is a serious, scientific business of constant investigation, analysis and evaluation which thus far has yielded evidence pointing to the conclusion that much of the saucer scare is no scare at all, but can be attributed to astronomical phenomena, to conventional serial objects, to hallucinations and to mass psychology. When an incident comes to the attention of Project Saucer personnel, it is first investigated by existing intelligence agencies in the vicinity of the sighting, usually a nearby Air Force base, the FBI, or the local police. In some cases, personnel from the AMC's Technical Intelligence Division fly to the scene for on-the-spot interrogation. A standard questionnaire is filled out by the observer under guidance of interrogators and any supplementary information available is gleaned by investigators. Standard questions are stated simply and slanted so that they may be answered with reasonable accuracy by the most inexperienced observers. In each case, time, location, size and shape of object, approximate altitude, speed, maneuvers, color, length of time in sight, sound, etc. are carefully noted. This information is sent in its entirety, together with any fragments, soil specimens, photographs, drawings, etc., pertinent to the incident to headquarters, AMC. Here highly trained evaluation teams take over. The information is broken down and filed on summary sheets, plotted on maps and graphs and integrated with the rest of the project material, thus giving an easily comprehended overall picture of Project Saucer. Then, duplicate copies of the data on each incident are sent to other investigating agencies including technical labs within AMC. These reports are studied in relation to many factors such as guided missile research activity, weather and many other atmospheric-sounding balloons launchings, commercial and military aircraft flights, flights of migratory birds and a myriad of other considerations which might furnish explanations. Based on the possibility that the objects could be unidentified and unconventional types of aircraft, technical analysis is made of some of the reports to determine aerodynamic, propulsion and control features which would be required for objects to perform as described. Generally, the flying objects are divided into four groups: flying discs, torpedo or cigar-shaped bodies with no wings or fins visible in flight, spherical or balloon-shaped objects, and balls of light. The first three groups are capable of flight by aerodynamic means and can be propelled and controlled by methods known to aeronautical designers. As for the lights, their actions, unless they were suspended from a higher object or were the product of hallucination, remain thus far unexplained. Eventually, reports from assisting laboratories and agencies are sent back to Project Saucer headquarters, often marking incidents closed. The project, however, is a young one. Much of its investigation is still underway. Currently, a psychological analysis is being made by AMC's Aeromedical Laboratory to determine what percentage of incidents are probably based on errors of the human mind and senses. Available preliminary reports now indicate that a great number of sightings can be explained away as ordinary occurrences which have been misrepresented as a rule of these human errors. Much of the work of saucer personnel involves precise graphing, charting and pinpointing at incidents. A frequency graph compiled recently showed that saucer sightings began in this country on a small scale in January of 1947, and reached their peak in July of that year, shortly after the Mount Rainier incident. They then fell off sharply for the rest of the year, but reoccurred in relative frequency in January, July and November of 1948. Reports coming to AMC now indicate a current low level of sighting, about 12 a month at present. Since flying saucers first hit the headlines almost 2 years ago, there has been wide speculation that the aerial phenomena might actually be some form of penetration of the Earth from another planet. Actually, astronomers are largely in agreement that only one member of the solar system besides Earth is capable of supporting life. That is Mars. On Mars there exists an excessively slow loss of atmosphere, oxygen and water against which intelligent beings, if they do exist there, may have protected themselves by scientific control of physical conditions. This might have been done, scientists speculate, but the construction of homes and cities underground where the atmospheric pressure would be greater and thus temperature extremes reduced. The other possibilities exist, of course, that evolution may have developed a being who can withstand the rigors of the Martian climate, or that the race, if it ever did exist, has perished. In other words, the existence of intelligent life on Mars, where the rare atmosphere is nearly devoid of oxygen and water and where the nights are much colder than our Arctic winters, is not impossible but is completely unproven. The possibility of intelligent life also existing on the planet Venus is not considered completely unreasonable by astronomers. The atmosphere of Venus apparently consists mostly of carbon dioxide with deep clouds of formaldehyde droplets, and there seems to be little or no water. Yet, scientists concede that living organisms might develop in chemical environments which are strange to us. Venus, however, has two handicaps. Her mass and gravity are nearly as large as the Earth, Mars is smaller, and her cloudy atmosphere would discourage astronomy, hence space travel. Reports of strange objects seen in the skies have been handed down through the generations. However, scientists believe that if Martians were now visiting Earth without establishing contact, it could be assumed that they have just recently succeeded in space travel and that their civilization would be practically abreast of ours. They find it hard to believe that any technically established race would come here, flaunt its ability in mysterious ways over the years, but each time simply go away without ever establishing contact. Astronomers, however, feel it particularly unlikely that a Martian civilization would be within a half century of our own state of advancement. Yet in the past 50 years we have just begun to use aircraft, and in the next 50 we will almost certainly start exploring space. Thus, it appears that space travel from another point within the solar system is possible but very unlikely. Reports in Project Saucer files call the odds against it at least 1,000 to 1. Outside the solar system's other stars, 22 in number, besides the Sun have satellite planets. The Sun has 9. One of these, Earth, is ideal for existence of life. Therefore, astronomers believe it reasonable that there could be at least one ideally habitable planet for each of the 22 other eligible stars. In this line of reasoning, the theory is also employed, of necessity, that man represents the average in advancement and development. Therefore, one half of the other habitable planets would be behind man in development and the other half ahead. It is also assumed that any visiting race could be expected to be far in advance of man. Thus, the chance of space travelers existing on planets attached to neighboring stars is a very much greater than the chance of space traveling Martians. The one can be viewed as almost a certainty, if you accept the thesis that the number of inhabited planets is equal to those that are suitable for life and that intelligent life is not peculiar to Earth. Whereas the possibility of space visitors from Mars is very slight indeed. There is only one stumbling block to a trip from such a distant planet to Earth, but it is a formidable block. The nearest eligible star is one called Wolf 359. This is 8 light years away. Traveling at 1/10 the speed of light, that is 18,000 miles per second, it would take a spaceship pilot 80 years for a one-way trip to Earth. And this speed is completely beyond the reach of any predicted level of rocket propulsion. If a process could be created to convert nuclear material into jet energy, the time could be cut from 60 to 16 years from Wolf 359 to Earth. The problems involved in the creation of the long idealized Buck Rogers type spaceship are myriad. While a special purpose rocket can be made as maneuverable as is desired with a very high performance, a high-performance spaceship would be large and unwieldy and could hardly be designed to maneuver frivolously in the Earth's atmosphere as the reported disks have done. Also, such an aircraft could not carry sufficient fuel to make repeated descents into the Earth's atmosphere. Scientists say a vertically descending rocket might well appear as a luminous disk to a person standing directly below. Yet observers at a distance would surely be able to identify the rocket as such. And the exhaust should be easy to see. With few exceptions, all disks have been reported within the continental limits of the United States, whereas spacemen could be expected to scatter their visits more or less uniformly over the globe. The small area covered by the disk barrage points strongly to the belief that the flying objects are of earthy origin, be they physical or psychological. Thus, although visits from outer space are believed to be possible, they are thought to be highly improbable. In particular, detailed reports made on individual incidents and the overall picture of Project Saucer point to the fact that actions attributed to the flying objects reported during the past 2 years are inconsistent with the requirements for space travel. The possibility that the saucers were supported by means of rays or beams was investigated and debunked. By rays or beams are meant either purely electromagnetic radiation or else radiation which is largely corpuscular like cathode rays, cosmic rays or cyclotron beams. Any device thus propelled would have to be fundamentally a reaction device. The basic theory of such devices is that a given amount of energy is most efficiently spent if the momentum thrown back or down is large. This means that a large mass should be given a small acceleration, a theorem well understood by helicopter designers. Beams or rays to the contrary, a small mass is given a very high velocity, and consequently enormous powers, greater than the world's total power capacity, would be needed to support even the smallest object by such means. Several unorthodox means of supporting or propelling a solid object have been considered, including the fiction writer's old standby, the anti-gravity shield, but all have been found impractical. This, In the opinion of investigating scientists, lends credence to the assumption that the unidentified flying objects are supported and propelled by some normal means, or else are not solids. Possibilities that the sources are foreign aircraft have also been considered, but the reported performance of the discs is so superior to anything we have yet approached in this country that it is believed that only an accidental discovery of a degree of novelty never before achieved could suffice to explain such devices.